Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to University Drive. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy. The 2022 commencement class of University of the Bahamas had more than 600 persons from various academic disciplines with various interests and backgrounds and diverse professional and personal aspirations. For the majority of them who earned baccalaureate degrees, they have been nurtured and shaped by UB for at least the last 4 years and will go on to help secure their families, build community, and make the Bahamas more competitive across various sectors. Others will excel on the international stage and drive innovation. There's no disputing the enormous importance that UB has in shaping excellence and creating the foundation and capacity for our nation to thrive. Joining us today is the president of University of the Bahamas, Dr. Rodney D. Smith. President Smith, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you back among us. It's been quite a while since you were last here. I want to start by asking you, what are your hopes and aspirations for our newest commencement class of some 613 persons, I believe?
Well, as I've reminded our graduates during the commencement exercises, change is occurring. The world is changing. And each and every one of them are a part of that change. And they need to change with an open mind. They need to understand that these changes will bring about the need for them to become lifelong learners, particularly with changes and adjustments in artificial intelligence and technology. So I would really, really continue to encourage those students to look at this new world with an open mind, be creative, be innovative, and understand that the world globally is at the same position. So we're really at ground zero, and so are they in terms of being able to create or add to what we see around us and globally.
As you know, the commencement ceremony that happened in May was the first in person since the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm curious about whether when you sat on the stage and watched all that was going on, did you have any kind of recollections about your first higher education commencement that you participated in?
My very first one?
Your very first one for you as the grad, yeah.
Well, interestingly, I completed my undergraduate degree 6 months early. And so I decided to return to the Bahamas. So my graduation was actually having dinner with the university president before I headed to the airport the next morning. And then I received my diploma in the mail. Mm-hmm. But all of my other graduations after that, my master's degrees as well as my doctorate degree, I participated in all of those commencement activities. You remember each and every one of them vividly, even to the conversation that you might have had with the president of the university. But yes, I do recall those. But when I was sitting on the stage and watching the graduates being recognized and even instructing them to turn their tassels to the left, I was really reflecting on or trying to imagine the world that they were going into, mm-hmm. as opposed to remembering my commencement. I have a tendency to focus more on the future than I do on the past, as you know. And so I was thinking about the students and what was in store for them. And I really, really hope that they were listening to me when I said to make it a habit of reading Proverbs on a daily basis and to go out there with an open mind, become lifelong learners and continue to innovate and find ways that, you know, if something could be created here in the Bahamas that will affect the world in a tremendous way. And Bahamians have a tendency to do that.
Sage advice. Dr. Smith, at the end of July 2022, you will conclude your tenure as president of UB. Do you feel a sense of accomplishment, a sense of completion?
I feel a sense of accomplishment a lot more than a sense of completion at this point, because dealing with catastrophic events was not a part of the inaugural vision, so to speak, in 2016. Dealing with a global pandemic that shut the world down was not part of that inaugural presentation, that visioning. So I feel like if we did not have those things, we could have had a greater sense of accomplishment. But in terms of progress made, I think that we've accomplished quite a bit. Completion, I think we still have a lot of more work to do.
Let's talk about the accomplishments. What are some of the banner things, pun intended, what are some of the big ticket items that that the university has been able to achieve?
Well, I think the greatest one is actually introducing the world's most advanced data management system for higher education, BANO, which is used in over 5,000 institutions in 50 countries around the world, is the one that we implemented starting in 2016 for all of our data management for the entire institution, from student records to financial records. And that has increased the level of efficiency of the institution tremendously. What I should point out is that we actually implemented the very latest, the newest version of Banner, and our data is stored in the cloud. So that actually was a tremendous savings for the university in that we do not have to maintain servers on campus. Most, if not all, companies or businesses, including universities, are moving to storing data in the cloud, which is an increased amount of efficiency and effectiveness. But University of the Bahamas, not only over a matter of a few short years, implemented that data management system, Elution Banner, but also put itself above, and in some cases on par with, but in a lot of cases above other institutions globally that are not where we are. As a matter of fact, University of the Bahamas in 2020 won one of six impact awards for the introduction of technology globally. One of six countries in the entire world, or six universities in the entire world that to win this impact award for the introduction of technology. So when I say that we are on par with or above, I'm very serious about that. Despite our size, we are competitive.
Can you ever imagine higher education again without technology?
No, as a matter of fact, where we are moving, and I say we, I'm talking about educators at a global level, we have to not only embrace lifelong learning, but we have to embrace artificial intelligence as well as the use of technology. The technology that's introduced in the world today, the artificial intelligence, helps us to keep abreast of what's going on globally, but also helps helps with globalization of education, of training, to the point where what's going on in one country is actually of relevance to every country. Those are the kinds of things that we have to be aware of. And in our educational systems, I really, really believe that we need to move a little faster than we're moving right now in terms of embracing the technology and embracing artificial intelligence. I know that we are moving in that direction, but some countries have already moved very, very much further than we are.
So this is a good spin-off question then. Higher education is much vastly different today than it was in the past. You are a trained psychologist. You have insights into human nature, human behavior, and how factors impact that. What have you been seeing? What kind of trends have you been seeing now that weren't present in the past? Compare and contrast that era of higher education to now.
Well, I think that, as I pointed out in some of my published opinions, prior to the 1980s, when we were introduced to the World Wide Web, the educational systems were based on an 1800s model based on that was designed for a different industrial era. We have continued to use that approach in our educational systems until more recently, when we've been starting seeing major advances in the use of technology in education and training. So we are in another industrial revolution era that is being sparked by the use of technology. Now you mentioned human beings or human responses, et cetera. One of the things that we know for a fact is that there no two persons in the world are exactly alike. But because of the model from the 1800s that we have adopted in our educational systems, we continue to try to teach our children or even adults face-to-face in a classroom setting, sitting in a classroom, as if everyone would learn this at the same rate. This, of course, creates what we refer to in psychological terms, sociology, as creating bell curves, where some are excelling at the top, some are failing at the bottom, and then there's a whole big number in the middle who are average. I think that the use of technology and the use of artificial intelligence will help our educational systems to address the needs of individuals, individual learners, and in most cases, enhance the absorption of knowledge, in some cases at a faster rate, in some cases for some students at the rate that they learn the best. And so we need to begin to think in terms of how do we design, how do we respond to this new norm, this new era, this new industrial revolution that's being sparked by artificial intelligence and the use of widespread use of technology. Trying to go back to a classroom with 20 or 30 children in the class with the one teacher at the front of the class, that's from the 1800s. And I keep repeating that. It's from the 1800s, an 1800s model designed for a different industrial revolution. We are now at another stage. And the faster we realize this and begin to adjust, the better will our country be and the more our students will be able to absorb new knowledge on a more global basis.
What I hear you talking about is building flexibility into the system, flexibility and adaptability.
Exactly.
So conversely then, is that something that University of the Bahamas is inculcating in its education students?
This is something that I would say the Academic Affairs Division of the university is moving towards and has been pushing. The administration of the university has been pushing in that direction. And I believe that the board will support that as well moving forward. I should say that on a global basis, academicians, higher education specialists are talking about the level of flexibility you talked about just now, flexible learning pathways. And that's the sustainable development goal number 4, in terms of making sure that countries around the world are reaching students or reaching individuals where they are in terms of their level of knowledge, whether informal or formal education or formal training, and being able to help those individuals advance with new knowledge and accessible new knowledge as well. So flexible learning pathways is the way to go. And this is being discussed in all countries all around the world by academicians and education specialists. What this also means though, is that we will see over time, we won't see it immediately. We won't see it perhaps in the next 10 years, but we will see over time a blurring between what we see today as grade levels, where we have students in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, grade 4, where we have students in primary school versus middle school versus senior secondary school, et cetera. So we will see some students excel a lot faster than others, but students will be able to learn at the pace that they are capable of learning and absorbing new knowledge. So over time, over the next several years, we will see a blurring of these grade level lines or demarcations. We will also see adults being able to re-enter the educational and training environment. We will see more the use of more certifications through educational modules, where these certifications can count towards the degree attainment as well, but less strict in terms of how we are requiring students today to go to school from freshman year to senior year, et cetera. We will see more flexibility moving forward.
President Smith, you're a university president, you're a husband, you're a father. How do we teach our children how to be more adaptable so that that can be an aspect of their resilience in terms of dealing with any shifts, changes, crises that may be on the horizon or forthcoming?
Well, what I do with my family, including with my wife and my two children, is to try to expose them to the latest technology to make sure that they are aware that they are understanding the changes that are taking place. I'll give you an example. During the pandemic, when we started having conversations globally about artificial intelligence and the use of augmented virtual reality, one of the things I did was to make sure that all of my family members have an Oculus. And if anybody is familiar with the metaverse, you will be familiar with the Oculus that actually allows individuals to experience virtual environments and even to manipulate virtual environments. So I know that during the pandemic, I was able to interact virtually with family members as well. And visit places all around the world virtually, exploring pyramids in Egypt, going to places around the world that I might not have traveled to yet, but I would like to one day. So what the use of the Oculus does is actually expands, like I said, the absorption of knowledge, exposure. And I think that once we get the use of AVR and artificial intelligence in our schools, we're going to see a tremendous increase in the absorption of knowledge and information. One of the things that we have to be sensitive to as a result of that pandemic is that there are persons, young people, who not only lost time in terms of access to information or the curriculum, et cetera, but we also have students who are developmentally, emotionally affected as a result of the pandemic. And so that's a stronger justification as to why we need to look at how we could do individual educational programming, or how could we reach our children to the point where that would allow them to learn rapidly or learn at their pace and still be able to absorb the information that's needed. And actually the answer to that is use of artificial intelligence, the use of augmented reality, allowing students to be in virtual environments and to manipulate those virtual environments, learning from the rest of the world and from access to different resources that we do not have access to physically or in hard copy, so to speak.
You've been leading higher education institutions now for quite a number of years. But in my mind, you're really a leader of people. How have you been able to develop and impact the people around you? What's your philosophy on that?
I believe in shared responsibility. I believe in encouraging individuals to take ownership of their job, of their position, of their contribution. And I believe that once we take ownership of it and we have shared responsibility, say for the institution, then it becomes a matter of collaboration where each of us, we're not thinking in terms of what is our own silo, so to speak, but rather our commitment to the institution, what is always in the best interest of the institution, so that You're not only empowered to make decisions, but you're encouraged to make decisions. I believe that people grow by making mistakes and learning from those mistakes. But I also believe that it's important to have a collective responsibility for the organization. I believe it's also very important to have that shared responsibility moving forward. So this is how I work with individuals. But I should say too that the greatest thing that you can do for any staff member or any person who's in your employ is to show kindness and consideration. I think that a lot of leaders get carried away with being in the position. I think that a lot of leaders get put themselves in an ego-driven position, so to speak. And I think it's more important that we remain human, that we understand what it means to be human, and that we try to make this world a better place for all of us, as opposed to trying to make it more difficult for some.
I think empathy plays a big part in that too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You're a leader of an institution, right? And leading sometimes can be burdensome. It can be overwhelming at times, especially when you're leading through crises, like massive and devastating storms and a global health scourge and economic upheaval. Does it mean that you've had to reimagine how the university has been delivering on its mission?
Well, I think that during a crisis situation, as you said, as a leader of people, I think it's more important to be available, to be compassionate, to be understanding, because, you know, when we went through Hurricane Dorian, several of our faculty, staff, and students went through some very, very difficult periods. And then we went right into having a global pandemic, which kind of made it even more difficult. So I tell people all the time that, not a lot of people, but what I say is that the level of compassion that I felt for individuals prior to these crisis situations is very different from the level of compassion that I had to exercise, or that one has to exercise during a crisis situation. There is a difference because you become an extended member of their family, their significant other. And in their lives, as the leader of the institution, you become that person. So you're not only talking about things that are work-related, you're not only talking about key performance indicators, you're not only talking about goals and objectives, but you're talking about individuals' lives and how they're coping and how they're managing, and even making suggestions as to how they can manage themselves in a COVID environment, in a crisis situation. So I think even when I look back, a lot of us have grown. And I believe that I have grown as a result of all of these situations. It is said that, in essence, that the greatest lessons that we learn in life come from these catastrophic situations, these crisis situations, these great challenges that we are faced with. That is when we learn our greatest lessons. And I think that those are moments in our lives when we have our greatest growth as well.
Understood. This is a good place for us to take our first break. Our guest is President of University of the Bahamas, Dr. Rodney D. Smith. You're listening to University Drive. We'll be back after this.
My name is Nicolette Bethel, and I'm a 2022 Wilson Award grant recipient. It's called Spatial Justice in the Postcolonial Bahamas. That's a working title. I'm not sure what the final title is going to be. So this is something that has been interesting me for a long time. How we make sense out of, or don't make sense out of, the land we live in, the space we occupy, and how we continue to oppress ourselves through our organization of space and geography. Well, okay, so it's important for a couple of reasons. One, it's invisible. It's almost totally invisible and we don't realize when we're replicating it. Two, because we're an archipelago and we're the only archipelago of this size and magnitude in the Atlantic. Three, because our archipelago is really big and the Bahamas is actually the biggest country in the Caribbean, but we never think of it like that because we're always thinking about islands. But when you put all the islands together, spread across all the water, we're the biggest country in the Caribbean. We're big. Hopefully, what I have to say will uncover new ideas, possibly break new ground. Spatial justice isn't an entirely new thing, but there's only a couple of us working in this arena in this country right now. So I would hope that it shifts a conversation and puts UB at the center of that conversation.
For more on the Wilson Awards and the Wilson Grants to fuel Bahamian research, contact grants@ub.edu.bs.
Chapter One Bookstore is your back-to-school headquarters. We are proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center throughout the semester for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael Elson Complex. Shop with us on Monday through Friday between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. Call us at 397-2650 or email us at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. See you soon!
Hi, I'm Sonia Farmer, and I'm a 2022 Wilson Award grant recipient. So my research project is called Indelible, and it's an oral history archive documenting experiences with and within citizenship, with and within the Bahamas. And this project is composed of three parts. Overall, it's a digital humanities project, but there is an oral history archive, which contains testimonies engaging with experiences with citizenship in this country. The second part is a collaborative art project where the participants also complete an altered voter's card however they would like. And the third component is an educational framework which provides toolkits so that we can engage with the crisis of citizenship in this country. So even though I'm coordinating this project and I've conceptualized this project, it's really primarily a collaborative project. I will be working with at least 50 different people speaking to me about their experiences with citizenship to make up this oral history archive. And I will also be working with historians, artists, human rights lawyers, and many other folks to create educational frameworks on the website as well so that we can engage with the history of citizenship and the current reality of citizenship. So it's really a collaborative project and I'm really excited to be bringing everyone together to examine what it means to be Bahamian.
For more on the Wilson Awards and the Wilson Grants to fuel Bahamian research, contact grants@ub.edu.bs.
Welcome back, everyone, to University Drive. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy, and our guest is President of University of the Bahamas, Dr. Wadney D. Smith. We've been having a very reflective conversation with President Smith. So I want to resume by asking, when you think about University of the Bahamas, its mission, its impact, and you assess UB's major indicators on things like teaching, learning, research, service, all feeders into national development, what does your own assessment reveal on that score?
Well, I think, first of all, I would go back to what I said earlier, that there's still a lot more work to be done. I think that in all of those areas, actually, we need to continue to advance. We need to continue to innovate. We need to continue to expand and explore. In terms of teaching, as I mentioned earlier, we need to be adaptive within this new norm, within this new society that's being driven by artificial intelligence and tech and the use of technology. In terms of our research capacity, I know we have a lot more to do in that area, a lot further to go. And I think that we're moving in that direction. I would just like to see us move a little faster in that direction, because we have a lot of catching up to do. In terms of service, I think that the university, particularly through its student body, could be more connected with the wider community, particularly the surrounding communities of the university campus, either in Grand Bahama or in Nassau or elsewhere. That I think that there needs to be more involvement of our students in community service. I would have liked to see a requirement that all students participate in a certain number of community service hours prior to graduation. I would also like to have seen implementation of a policy that required all undergraduate students to have at least one study abroad experience for a full semester before graduation, meaning that they would have this done by their third year and then return and complete their fourth year at the university. But they would be going out into a world with a whole series of experiences that one cannot get if one remains stationary in the country and not travel at all. So those are some of the things. I think that, as I said, there are areas that need a lot more work, and those are some of them. I think our faculty members have been very, very actively involved in terms of serving as resources for the country, for the national government. I believe that that is direction to go. What we have focused on in the first 5 years of the University of the Bahamas' existence is building the foundations, building the strong, strong foundations that would allow the university to continue to grow from strength to strength to strength. And I think we've done, in terms of accomplishments, I think we have done a tremendous amount. And I owe a lot of that to our teams. We talked about Banner, introduction of Banner earlier. But there are other areas as well across the university that we have made significant progress in. And we could even go down one division at a time, just as a review.
I'm curious about whether you see, so the University of the Bahamas, whose mission is to support and drive national development, in essence, is serving a country that is an archipelago. Do you see that as a challenge or an opportunity?
You know, interesting you said that, because I see it as an opportunity. I see it as an opportunity now that we are focusing more on the use of technology, focusing more on remote access to education. It's an opportunity for us to also help communities around the country within our archipelagic nation to develop, to expand, for people to stay home and to grow a business there, or people to stay home and be innovative and actually run businesses from their islands or from their settlements, from their communities, even on a global basis. So the opportunities are tremendous. I know that during the pandemic, we had a lot of individuals who were creative, were entrepreneurial, and they were able to expand businesses, and they were able to create new opportunities. And I think that same thing can be applied to all of our islands in the country. But also, I think the use of the technology that we have nowadays has brought us even closer.
So during this period of trials and overcoming adversity, have you ever had to rely on your community of fellow senior administrators and presidents across the globe, that network? Have you been tapping into that to help guide how the institution pivots and adapts?
Yes, in many instances, but I think that as you know, I am a member of associations and sit on boards in the United States as well. But I think that the networks are different. There's a difference in a Caribbean region network versus a more global network that comes out of the Institute for International Education and Planning out of UNESCO. There's a difference between even a regional association of public colleges and universities in the United States. So each carries something different. I was fortunate in that I was able to maintain my linkages with all of them and expand my knowledge base based on what they were going through as well. And so that sharing helped me to help my colleagues in senior administration at UB to understand that we were not going through this alone and that we could learn from our colleagues in other countries as well. As a matter of fact, I am very, very pleased to say that several of our senior administrators are members of international associations. As a matter of fact, sit on boards now, including our chief academic affairs officer, who is a member of a team that is writing a manual for chief academic affairs officers for the United States of America. So our people have been exposed and our senior administrators have expanded their worlds as well. So they also bring new knowledge back to University of the Bahamas with an understanding as to where the institution needs to go with a knowledge base of where other institutions are going as well.
What are the top experiences, shared similarities, or maybe even differences that institutions across the globe have encountered, particularly over the last 2 years, as far as you've been able to deduce from these networks?
Yes, well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there were many institutions around the world that were not prepared for the pandemic. As a matter of fact, we know for a fact that several institutions in our neighboring country, the United States, a lot of them are going through severe issues in terms of declining enrollment. One, we're seeing situations where less and less high school students are expressing an interest in going to college. We have a lot of students who are turning to the internet to acquire their own knowledge and understanding. We have the same thing here in the Bahamas. So that's one of the concerns. I think the biggest issue that that institutions of higher education face today is a lack of funding or insufficient funding, because a lot of them are tied to tuition revenue. But even more so, a lot of the institutions were not prepared for remote teaching or for remote operations, and they suffered. The University of the Bahamas was prepared. University of the Bahamas was able to make a quick transition and expand access to technology very, very quickly. A lot of institutions were not able to do that. We see a lot of mergers going on across various states in the United States, mergers of institutions. We see institutions actually buying smaller institutions and expanding their programs. We see entire systems that are being amalgamated. I'll give you an example. 4-year systems are being amalgamated with 2-year or community college systems, having one chancellor as opposed to having two separate chancellors. And that helps to coordinate overall education delivery across both systems at the same time. So it's not, like I said earlier, separating that line that separates one level to the next is actually being blurred already. So we see things like this. We see institutions doing everything that they could to survive, but we also see a tremendous difference too in leadership. Over the past and even now, many institutions are understanding that when they hire college university presidents today, is not the same as the kind of college or university president they hired prior to the pandemic. So a leader coming into an institution today has to be someone who is a futurist, someone who understands what to expect and how to deal with those challenges and those expectations moving forward. I would say that the job of a president today of in higher education institutions is a lot more difficult than it was, say, when I started at COB in 2014, or back in 2004, because the world has changed and expectations have changed as well. The challenges are different. The obstacles are different. But it's something that we all have to adapt to.
Let's change course a bit. I asked earlier about a sense of accomplishment. Going on 8 years is quite a long time to lead, shape, and influence. What would you say are the hallmarks of impactful leadership?
Well, I think one thing comes to mind is something that I used to talk about when I trained executives in higher education. You're going to know how effective you are as a leader if the people who report directly to you or the persons who you've been working with are able to continue to carry on even in your absence. If you did your job as an effective leader and your team is trained and your team has shared responsibility and collective responsibility, collective ownership for the organization, they are continue to express that level of pride, that level of caring, that commitment and loyalty to the institution, even when the leader is no longer there. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think that at this point in time, I think that I have every confidence in the persons that I've been working with, the team at UB. And I believe that they will continue to carry on and building the university. One thing I did remind them of this week in our weekly senior team meetings is that they are the specialists. They are the advisors and counselors to the president. Any university president can only be as effective as his or her vice presidents. As a matter of fact, everyone at the institution, all stakeholders, faculty, staff, and everyone has to be remain committed to building the University of the Bahamas, to building and keep moving in a positive direction, building from strength to strength.
President Smith, a lot of people have said that one of the revelations that they've come away with, especially since the pandemic, is how important quality time with family is. How have you been able to strike that balance, or have you been able to strike that balance in terms of quality time with your family while you have been leading an institution?
Well, that has been more difficult. I think it's been more difficult for a lot of people because many of us worked from home. Many of us were balancing numerous responsibilities simultaneously. And when your office becomes, when your dining room table, so to speak, becomes your office, and it affects everyone within the environment, not only extended family, but also persons who are in the house with you, because their behavior has to be different as well. But we know for a fact that we had many, many parents who were working full-time from home as well as being caretakers, as well as teachers, as well as providers. So a lot of people were multitasking, and it became difficult, I think, for me as well as other people, to have that quality family time as I think we would all want and need, because our work days became blurred. I know that all of the vice presidents in working with them over the past couple of years, I had to remind folks constantly that they have to have a start and a cutoff date for their work day. And I know it not only happened in higher education, it happened at everybody all over the place in different organizations. People were sending emails at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. People were still answering emails at 10-11 o'clock at night. Or people were still working on projects. And so the sleep pattern has been disrupted for the entire world, to be honest with you. And getting back to some degree of biological normalcy is something that I think we're going to have to struggle with. But to answer your question, it is difficult. It has been difficult. But I think that one of the things that you mentioned is that people came to the realization of the need for quality time with family members when the opportunity is taken. And you have to take those opportunities. You have to create those opportunities. I know I did that in last year and with Christmas with my family members. Those shorter periods, I think the focus was on quality time. And we have to do that even more.
Thanks for that response. We're winding down our time together, so I'm trying to get through as many questions as I can. When you look back on your life in totality, what can you say has been your greatest sources of pride?
I told my wife recently that one thing that I am grateful for, perhaps more than a whole lot of other things, is the fact that she and I met. Is the fact that we've been married now for 36 years. We've been through ups and downs. We've been through hills and valleys, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we're still together. We still love each other. I think that's one of my greatest things. I think also our children. But when I reflect, even at a deeper level, I have been a student of metaphysics and religion for over 20 years now, which a lot of people don't know about. And I believe that my spiritual unfoldment over the years and my own personal growth over the years in terms of my spiritual unfoldment, my understanding of God and the universe and my explorations in those areas are great. And I think that all of that really helped me to be a more effective leader for UB. I have always, a lot of people don't know that I was the first school psychologist for the Bahamas. And I have always prayed that God would allow me to be a positive effect on people's lives wherever I go. And one of the things I noticed is that I have always been in situations where, or associated with institutions, where some major crisis had to be dealt with. I was president in Northern New Jersey during the 9/11 attacks, as one example. I was actually working as an employment counselor in 1974 when the College of the Bahamas was being created. And so different aspects of my life, God has put me in positions where I can be of greater service and I can go down the list. But even being at UB to help the institution transition from College of the Bahamas to University of the Bahamas, and then helping my colleagues live through Hurricane Dorian as well as through the pandemic, I think that all of those were part of my purpose. And I think that God has even greater purposes for me. But I look forward to the future. When I look back on accomplishments, I think that my spiritual unfoldment, my closeness to God, my closeness to my family, and definitely what has happened all of my life, my closeness and appreciation for my country and for Bahamians and I think those are the areas that I would say are my greatest accomplishments. Things that I did at the University of the Bahamas and with the team in terms of building the institution, in terms of making it a better institution, in terms of preparing the foundation and everything else, those are all part of that same equation. When I look back, all of that is designed to improve the lives of others. In the Bahamas, improve the lives of Bahamians, focus on national development. When we focus on national development, we focus on individual Bahamians. When we focus on individual Bahamians, we focus on all of us collectively.
So faith has played a major part in your awakening and your evolution and your impact, then you'd say.
Definitely, without any question.
So our time is winding down. I am going to give you the leeway to share any parting thoughts as we wrap up our time together.
Well, what I would like to say, I want to leave listeners with this advice, word of advice. Take a lesson from the University of the Bahamas for all of our organizations. We have a tendency to, when we change leadership at any level, at almost every level, the new leader comes in and has to start over or feel the need to start over without understanding everything about what has happened before. The University of the Bahamas, for the very first time, we're doing a proper presidential transition from an outgoing president to the incoming president. Dr. Rowland and I are having conversations. I have prepared transitional notes for him. I'm answering his questions, addressing any concerns that he might have moving forward in that position. And I think that our organizations in the Bahamas need to adapt or adopt the same behavior. Whenever there is change in leadership, whether it's at the government level, whether it's at an organizational level, whether it's at an NGO level or whatever, proper leadership transition only serves the people of the organization and the organization itself, because we have to get into the habit of building from strengths. We have to get in the habit of taking the best from the past and carrying it into the future to improve, to improve, to improve. If we start over each time we change leadership, then we don't progress at all. We take 5 steps back in order to take 2 steps forward. And I think that's something we need to get away from.
Okay, well, thank you for that input. And President Smith, you know, this is, I believe, your second or third time on University Drive. We'll see if we can sneak in just another one just before you demit office. But it's been such a enlightening time together for this particular episode. We wish you all the best. And we wish you and your family all of the best. Thank you so much for joining us again. And thank you to our listeners for connecting. I've been your host, Tamika Lundy. This has been University Drive. Remember to stay connected to University of the Bahamas. Log on to www.ub.edu.bs and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and TikTok. Until the next episode, take care.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations and the Communications and Creative Arts Academic Unit at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.